Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We're here today to continue our hearing in docket number 130575. Let's be off the record a minute. Test, is that all right? Thank you. On the record, a brief technical adjustment there. As I mentioned, this is a continuation of our hearing in docket number 130575, commonly known as the general rate case of Questar Gas Company. The issue for today is cost of capital. Are there any preliminary matters before we proceed? Thank you. Council?
Good morning. Should we take appearances very quickly? Or
I thought we had you have a new...
I see
that now, Ms. Bell. Thank you very much. I missed Mr. Monson sitting next to you there. Go ahead.
On behalf of Questar Gas Company, in addition to myself, Colleen Larkin Bell, and Jennifer Nelson Clark, we also have Gregory B. Monson.
Welcome, Mr. Monson. Are there any additional appearances today?
For the Division of Public Utilities, I'd like to also make an appearance for Patricia Schmidt. She may or may not join us at the table today, but I'd like to put that on the record.
Thank you very much. Anything further? Thank you, Ms. Bell.
We would like to call Mr. David Curtis.
Before you take your seat, Mr. Curtis, thank you. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Please be seated.
Good morning, Mr. Curtis.
Good morning.
Would you please state your full name for the record?
My name is David M. Curtis.
And by whom are you employed?
I am employed by Questar Corporation as their vice president and controller, and I am also serve as the vice president and controller for Questar Gas.
Did you file direct testimony in this proceeding consisting of 20 pages and pre-marked as QGC Exhibit 2.0, with attached exhibits 2.1 through 2.11 on July 1st, 2013?
Yes.
Did you also file rebuttal testimony in this proceeding consisting of 15 pages and pre-marked as QGC Exhibit 2.0R with attached exhibits 2.1R through 2.4R on December 5th, 2013?
Yes.
Were these exhibits prepared by you or under your supervision?
Yes.
Are you prepared today to give a summary of your testimony?
Yes, I am.
Would you please proceed?
Okay, thank you. I filed direct and rebuttal testimony in this general rate case requesting a continuation of the current 10.35 allowed return on equity and a 7.90 overall return on capital. This rate of return testimony is based on financial models of investor expectations, returns authorized in other jurisdictions, and risk analysis. I believe that an allowed return on equity of 10.35 is necessary to attract capital and maintain the financial strength to continue a significant infrastructure investment program. I have not proposed an inflated rate of return with expectations that the filed return would be pared back in the rate case. Rather, I believe that an authorized return on equity in this range is expected by investors. I've used several approaches to show that an authorized return equity of 10.35 is reasonable and should be approved by the Public Service Commission. These approaches include the discounted cash flow model, the capital asset pricing model, an analysis of actual returns earned by other natural gas distribution companies, and an analysis of returns authorized by various Public Service Commissions for other natural gas distribution companies. A summary of the results of my analysis is shown on page 3 of my rebuttal testimony. The discounted cash flow model and the capital asset pricing model require the use of a proxy group of publicly traded natural gas distribution companies. Slow down. Thanks. Okay. To measure investor expectations, since the stock of Questar Gas is not publicly traded. I selected a group of natural gas distribution companies that I believe are similar to Questar Gas and meet my criteria for inclusion in the proxy group. The witnesses for the Division of Public Utilities and the Office of Consumer Services have used similar proxy groups. The discounted cash flow model is used to estimate the discount rate used in a calculation, where the present value of investors' expected future cash flows equals the current stock price. If one assumes that cash flows grow at a constant rate, then this discount rate is equal to the dividend yield plus the growth rate. While this equation is simple, the actual growth assumptions used by investors are not knowable. I prepared two versions of the discounted cash flow model. The first version is the traditional model using analyst growth estimates and dividend yields. This model produced results that I believe are not fully reflective of investor expectations. Earnings growth estimates as reported by the few sell-side analysts that actively follow the stocks in the proxy group are relatively static and are generally lower than either actual historical earnings growth rates or future growth rates as reported by these companies in Questar Gas. It is important to note that these sell-side analysts who publish growth expectations are not investors. They do not make the buy-sell decisions that set the market price for the stock. While some retail investors consider these projections in making investment decisions, most institutional investors have their own buy-side analysts who make projections of earnings growth. All natural gas distribution companies that I am aware of are engaged in significant infrastructure replacement programs to replace aging facilities and comply with increasing and costly pipeline safety regulations. This investment, as well as customer growth from an improving economy, will likely result in earnings growth above the level reported by these few sell-side analysts. I prepared a second version of the discounted cash flow model because of my concern over the artificially low level of earnings growth rates, as reported. I used an average of the 5-year historical earnings growth rate, the 10-year historical earnings growth rate, and an industry earnings growth rate as reported to investors by the proxy companies that provide an estimate, plus Questar Gas. The results of this discounted cash flow model are significantly higher than the first model. I give some weight to both of these models since my recommended allowed return on equity of 10.35 is in between the results of these models. The capital asset pricing model is a risk premium model that uses investor expectations about risk and return. Investors require higher returns for riskier investments. Investments in common stock are riskier than investments in long-term government bonds. Investments in smaller stocks are riskier than investments in larger stocks. This model uses the historical relationship between returns from the different asset classes. I prepared a capital asset pricing model for the proxy companies using the yield on the 30-year Treasury bond, the long-term market risk premium from the Ibbotson Valuation Yearbook, beta measurements as reported by Valueline, and size premium from the Ibbotson Valuation Yearbook. This model shows a mean expected return about the same as my recommended authorized return. I prepared a risk analysis of the proxy group compared to Questar Gas. The risks were as follows. Number one, Questar Gas bond ratings are currently A3 for Moody's and A for Standard & Poor's. These ratings are consistent with the average bond ratings for the proxy group. Number two, Questar Gas's interest coverage is lower than the proxy group, indicating higher financial risk. Number three, Questar Gas's actual financial return on equity is lower than the proxy group, indicating higher financial risk. Number four, Questar Gas's capital expenditures as a percent of net plant are slightly higher than the proxy group, indicating slightly higher risk because of the need for additional capital. Number five, Questar Gas is smaller than the proxy group based on the number of customers, which increases risk due to lower economies of scale, less diversification, and more difficult access to capital. For these reasons, I believe Questar Gas has slightly higher risk than the proxy companies. I prepared an analysis of the impact of lower returns on equity as proposed by the Division of Public Utilities and the Office of Consumer Services. Questar Gas's bond ratings are at risk, even if it is allowed to continue base rates on a 10.35% return on equity because of the high level of investment required in the next few years. These bond ratings would be under serious risk of downgrade if the allowed returns of equity proposed by the Division of Public Utilities or the Office of Consumer Services are approved in this case because credit metrics deteriorate. I compiled actual financial returns on equity for the proxy companies for the years 2002 through 2012. My recommended rate of return on equity is within in the range of these historical returns and is significantly lower than the mean. I summarized recently authorized returns on equity for natural gas distribution companies through the first half of 2013. Mr. Wheelwright provided updated information from SNL on recently authorized returns through the end of 2013. 4 out of 10 results for the last half of 2013 were 10% or higher. The mean approved return was 10.5 for the first half of 2013, The mean approved return was 9.50 for the first half of 2013 and 9.71 for the last half of 13. My recommendation of a 10.35 authorized return would not be out of line within the range of the 2013 returns. The witness for the Office of Consumer Services recommends that Questar Gas's authorized return on equity be adjusted downward because of various rate stabilization and revenue recovery mechanisms. This recommendation does not make sense because companies in the proxy group used to analyze the authorized return have similar mechanisms. The table on page 9 of my rebuttal testimony shows that all of the proxy companies have a form of rate stabilization, and 6 out of 8 proxy companies have infrastructure tracking mechanisms. In conclusion, I believe the overall analysis and evidence supports a continuation of a 10.35 authorized return on equity. Questar Gas is committed to make capital expenditures necessary to support accelerating customer growth and to upgrade infrastructure. To do this, Questar Gas needs access to debt and equity capital. An authorized return of 10.35 is just and reasonable, will enable Questar Gas to attain this capital, and will help prevent further declines in credit metrics.
Does that conclude your summary?
Yes, it does.
I move for the admission of Mr. Curtis's testimony and exhibits.
Any objection? They're received.
Mr. Curtis is now available for questioning.
Thank you. Mr. Jetter.
Yes, I do have a few questions. Thank you. Mr. Curtis, my name is Justin Jetter. I represent the Division of Public Utilities. I think I'm going to just kind of walk through a few questions I have in chronological order with your direct testimony.
Okay.
I think I'd like to start, if I can just direct you to line 112 and 113. This is in the part of your testimony where you're determining the companies that you'll use as proxies.
Yes.
You've removed one company because it was in the process of acquiring or being acquired. Is that right?
Yes, I did.
And that was not part of the categories that you've excluded in previous testimony. Is that correct?
Right. I've used that company in previous testimony. Correct.
Okay. That's just a quick question I had about that. Moving forward, I'd like to ask a few questions about the discounted cash flow model. You provided testimony in the 2009 general rate case, is that correct?
Yes.
And in the 2009 general rate case, you did a similar calculation to what you've calculated using the industry analysts' numbers, is that correct?
Yes.
And in the 2009 rate case, the industry analysts, you relied on their numbers as far as you didn't create your own version of the discounted cash flow with 5- and 10-year historic averages.
No, I did not use that specifically.
Okay. And in this case, you chose, I believe in the previous case, you had just chosen 2 industry analysts. In this case, you, I believe, have 5. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, identified some additional source of information.
Okay. And these are common analysts used within the industry, is that correct?
Yes.
And people rely on these analysts?
I guess I don't know what you mean exactly by that. I mean, it's common knowledge. I think as I say
you think they're reputable analysts?
Yes, they're certainly reputable.
Okay. And you wouldn't have included them in your testimony if you didn't think they were reputable?
No.
Okay. And so you trusted their analysis in 2009. You didn't make any adjustments for conservative estimates of future earnings growth at that point. But so I guess my question here is, they were accurate in 2009, but they're not accurate today. Is that essentially your testimony?
No, that's not necessarily. You know, I think in the previous case, you know, those returns were consistent with some historical returns. Those, as I recall, typically those expectations of growth were a little higher, and they have now been pared back. So,
okay. And do you think that they've been pared back based on these analysts' estimates of future market conditions?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know everything that goes into their estimates. You know, they are what they are.
Okay.
But, you know, certainly what stood out in this at this point in time is we're seeing the natural gas distribution business going through a period of high growth because of these infrastructure replacement programs. And so we're seeing the analysts are the companies are talking about it. For the first time, the companies are giving long-term growth rates and growth expectations that they weren't necessarily publishing before. And those expectations are higher than what these analysts are saying.
Okay.
So that's why I believe that we need to, in addition to just looking at the sell-side analysts' estimates of earnings growth, also look at other estimates, which I believe are used by the broader pool of investors.
Okay. But across the board, all five of these analysts are doing the same thing, and they're lowering the return on...
It's not across the board. It's kind of in on average.
Okay. And in light of that, then you've created... a new version of the discount cash flow model for this case.
Yes.
And it's one that you haven't done before, is that correct? This is
right.
The first time?
Yes.
Do you have your testimony in front of you?
Yeah.
I'd like to turn to exhibit, we can just go to 2.3 real quickly and then we'll go to the next page, which is page two of 2.3. Page one of 2.3 is consistent with the same methods that you've used in previous rate cases, and that indicates a range of 7.96 to 9.5 with an average of 8.73. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And the new one that you've created for this case is on page two of exhibit 2.3. When we look down to, I guess these are the footnotes is what you might call them, the line 1, 2, and 3 below line 12.
Right.
You've compiled a growth rate estimate based on what companies are telling investors. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That's what companies are estimating. When companies courting investors, is it fair to say that they have a certain incentive to show a favorable number?
No.
No, you don't think they have an incentive?
Absolutely not. I think they have an incentive to show an amount, something that is reasonable and that they can actually meet.
Okay. Is there any data, do you know, that's published that backs up these numbers?
These numbers are all from published in internal reports off the from the companies.
Okay, and they're from internal reports. Do you have any basis for
published to investors? So
okay.
These are all public. Everything here is public. It's been in a 8K to investors.
Okay, and I see Questar's 5-year growth rate on here.
Questar Gas,
Questar Gas's 5-year growth rate. is 7 to 9%, is that correct?
Yes.
And that's the highest of the group, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And effectively, as this flows through, using Questar's five-year inside projected growth rate, it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? If you base a return that you're going to get from the commission on your own internal estimate of what you think your growth will be, isn't that, in effect, allowing you to affect?
I wouldn't say that's the main driver. The main driver for this growth rate is the investment that Questar expects to make over the next 5 years.
Okay. But that's an internal number.
Yes.
You've come up with, and then you've added it into your own.
I've averaged that in, averaged with everything else.
Okay. And you said you've averaged it, except I see here that you take the midpoint rather than the average.
I take the average of the high and low, and then I average the high and low together. So you can see, I've taken the low estimate and the high estimate, taken that version, and then I've averaged those two numbers.
Okay, and so that midpoint actually is just an average of
yes numbers.
Okay. And do you anticipate using this model? Do you think this model is better than the analyst's growth estimates?
I think it needs to be used in addition to the analyst growth expectation.
Okay. And so maybe somewhere between the two might be an accurate number.
And my number is in between the two.
If we were looking at these two and you had to choose a number within the range in which they overlap, is it correct that that would be somewhere between 6.19 and 9.5?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Where they overlap, I'm sorry.
The maximum value from the discounted cash flow in the traditional model using the analyst's growth estimates is 9.5.
Correct.
And the minimum using your model is 6.19. And so the range of overlap between those, where you could pick a number that would fall within the maximum of the traditional model and the minimum, would be somewhere between 6.19 and 9.5. Is that correct?
I wouldn't calculate it that way. I've looked at the over, I think I've used both of these models in addition to everything else that we've used to help set that rate.
Okay.
So it's not, the range, of that wide clearly shows the weakness of the model anyway. I don't believe there's investors out there that only require a 6% return on one utility and would require, something twice that on another utility. That, the range of outcomes here shows the, somewhat underlines the weakness of the model anyway. You're trying to estimate something that's really not knowable.
Okay. But it would just be fair to say that 10.35 is not within the range of the traditional model as you've calculated it. Is that correct?
It's 10.35 is not in the traditional model, no.
Okay, thank you.
If that's the question.
Oh, that's a good question. I just have one more question about your model here. You have 8 companies in the top chart that I see. Below where you're looking at the industry growth rate as reported by investors to individual companies, there are 6. Why are some companies missing?
3 of those companies did not publish any future 5-year growth expectations to investors. That's not a required disclosure. That's a voluntary disclosure.
Okay.
And 3 of them chose not to.
Okay. And you also did not include Questar Gas in the top portion. Is that because it's not publicly traded?
Correct.
Okay. I'd like to move on a little bit now to the next portion of your testimony, the capital asset pricing model. And specifically, if I could direct you to your direct testimony, beginning on line 212 to 215, this gives a description of a graph that's included in your exhibit, which indicates, and this is a quote from line 214, the level of risk can be measured by the variability of returns. Is that a sound fundamental principle of returns?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
That's, you know,
market analysis.
The theory is investors require more risk because of volatility, more return because of volatility.
Okay. And the primary volatility that investors are concerned about is the cash flow that they're going to receive from a particular investment along with the growth of that investment's value.
Right, and the variability in that cash flow is, okay. Yeah.
And so the standard deviation of that cash flow would be one of, if not the most important factor.
Right.
Okay. And now you've testified, I believe, that you believe that Questar's risk, as investors see it, is greater than the comparable companies that you've compared it to.
I think the use of that word is slightly higher.
Slightly higher. Okay. Have you reviewed Douglas Wheelwright's testimony, the DPU witness?
Yes.
I don't know if you have it with you. I have a copy
I
if you'd
do.
Like to. I'm specifically looking at
this direct or Suri Buddle.
It's the last exhibit in the direct testimony, and I believe it's also the last in the Suri Buddle testimony. Is it? Okay, so you can.
This exhibit 111, is that?
You can, yes, it's 1.11. Oh, okay. I am going to have to direct you. It is slightly different in the Suri Buddle.
So go
testimony.
To the Suri. Go
yes.
to Suri Buddle.
Okay. And that is exhibit 1.6 SR. Okay. If you look at the column on the furthest right of the page, which indicates a 9-year standard deviation. Could you go down and tell me what Questar Gas's 9-year standard deviation is?
This shows 0.48.
Okay. And as a general comparison, would you say that that's higher or lower than the typical standard deviation you see above for the proxy group?
That's lower.
Okay. And
lower. Sorry.
And is it correct that there's only one in that proxy group with a lower 9-year standard deviation?
I haven't recalculated this, but that appears to be so.
Okay, and that's Atmos Energy?
Yes.
Correct. And if you look on the row of Atmos Energy directly to the left of the standard deviation, could you tell me the 3-year average and 5-year average return on common equity for Atmos Energy?
The 3-year average is 9.28 and the 5-year average is 9.12. I'm assuming this is the financial return on equity, not a regulatory return on equity. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. I think Atmos is a little bit of a special case because they have grown significantly over this period of time by acquisition. And so typically they have certain costs, the costs above the historical costs are not allowed in returns, so they are known throughout the industry to have very low actual allowed returns.
Okay, and they also have a very low, by industry comparison, standard deviation of their
yes.
returns. And would you say that fits with what you've testified earlier as far as the low standard deviation correlates directly to a low average return?
You know, I don't know that a standard deviation of this return over 9 years is you know, would be total. I mean, certainly it would be part of the evidence that would suggest that, the proxy group was selected. It was a group of, you know, distribution companies, just like Questar Gas.
Uh-huh. Okay. And in your model, your discounted cash flow model, you're using a 5-year and a 10-year historical average?
Right.
Okay. And a nine-year historical average is in that range?
Yes.
Okay. And just to clarify, Questar Gas would then be the second lowest nine-year standard deviation within?
Using that measure, yes.
Okay. And just to make sure I'm finishing, I guess, this area of my cross-examination, that lower standard deviation would in effect indicate a lower risk for Questar Gas, all else equal.
That would be a measure that would show there by me.
Thank you. I'd like to move on to your recommendation portion, which is found at line 445 of your direct testimony. And it's similar, I believe, to your rebuttal testimony. Approximately line 54. In either case, I've gone through the numbers a few times, and I am having trouble calculating 10.35. Could you explain how this set of numbers results at a 10.35? Is that a number you've chosen just on your experience, or is that something that you've calculated with weighting?
The 10.35 is what we are currently allowed to earn in Utah, and my belief is that we should be able to continue to be allowed that earn that 10.35. There's not a mathematical, it's not any sort of average of these numbers. There's certainly a range. It's within the range of these numbers.
Okay.
And, you know, as we put this case together, you know, what we're asking for is we're not asking for something much greater than we're allowed today. We're asking to be allowed to continue to earn the 10.35.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. You discussed earlier a little bit of a difference between a financial return on equity and a commission-approved return on the rate base.
Yes.
Do you generally believe that one is a good proxy for the other?
They certainly relate fairly closely to each other. There are certain elements that don't, you know, are different.
Okay. You mentioned also in your testimony, but also in your opening statement here today, that a lower rate of return number would put your bond rating at risk. Are you aware of any of the bond rating agencies currently looking at Questar Gas and indicating that they intend or are proposing to change the bond rating?
Yes, back in September, Moody's wrote a general report basically stating that they are reconsidering the credit metrics of the utility industry. And in November, they issued a report stating, you know, kind of a follow-up to that report, listing specifically, you know, all, basically it was almost all investor-owned utilities in the United States, with the exception of those that had special issues that they're reviewing for a possible upgrade.
Okay, so you may be in line for an upgrade, not a downgrade. Is that right?
Yes, it's important to note that we already have a split rating. Moody's already rates us at A3, which is one step lower than Standard & Poor's rates us at an A.
Okay.
So, you know, but, you know, it's important to note also that Moody's is looking at our current allowed return of 10.35, not some a number dramatically lower than that that would certainly affect those credit metrics.
Okay. And at 10.35, they're looking at it as a potential upgrade. Is that correct?
A potential upgrade along with all the other utilities. It's not specific to Questar Gas. It's basically they're looking broadly across the whole universe, and they've come to the conclusion that they need to shift their risk model slightly.
And are you aware of any indication that the rate of return in Wyoming at considerably lower has affected the credit ratings that or their review?
Wyoming is only a couple of percent of Questar Gas's operations, so mathematically it just doesn't come in.
Okay. I just have a few other questions from your opening statement. You noted that in 2013, 4 out of 10 of the approved rate cases nationally were over 10%. And that would mean that 6 out of 10 were under 10%?
Yes. Yes.
And I believe that you stated that the average in the first half of the year was 9.5 and the average in the second half of the year was 9.7.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And these are other companies that are in that same review for their bond rating that may be upgraded?
I did not compare that list. You know, not all of them. You know, it depends on where the debt is held. I would assume some of them are. But I have not compared those lists.
But would it be fair to say that you would assume that Moody's, for example, would be aware of the downward trend in ROE when reviewing all utility companies for future bond ratings?
Sir, you know, and I don't know, you know, that downward trend, I think, is maybe a little question. You know, it seems to me like, given the interest rate environment, that trend has probably turned. And certainly, you know, what we've seen in the last half of 13 is different than what we saw in the first half. There's a lag in the time of the prosecution of the case, and interest rates have changed. I would expect that that direction would have changed.
Okay. If Moody's were seeing averages in the 9.5 to 9.7 range for ROE, would it be fair to assume that they would project Questar Gas's rate case outcome to be in that range if they were looking at what they think an average outcome would be during the 2013 year?
I don't know. I don't know what they did on that.
Sure. Okay. Final question I have for you. Is Questar Gas's operations and revenue streams riskier, or would you say less risky than Rocky Mountain Power?
You know, I don't know if I have a great answer for that. I certainly believe that, you know, our need for capital is large going forward, and we need access to capital markets. I know Rocky Mountain also, you know, has that. Their need for capital tends to be a little lumpier as they invest in fairly large facilities. Our need is maybe a little more steady. So, you know, I don't know.
Okay. I believe that's all of the cross-examination questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Coleman.
I do have a few questions. Thank you. Mr. Curtis, my name is Brent Coleman. I am the new counsel for the Office of Consumer Services.
Okay.
I believe today is the first day we've had an opportunity to meet.
Yes. Nice to meet you.
Is that appropriate for you? Is that helpful? Okay. Please let me know.
Is the reporter April here?
I don't know yet.
All right. Let me know if I need to adjust, and I'll do my best. I have a couple of questions that are going to move back and forth between some of the testimony, your written testimony, and some of the charts that Mr. Jetter has had you look at. So I apologize in advance for some of the
That's right.
the flipping back and forth. First, I'd like to move to your direct testimony, starting on page 8, line 198. And this is a summary of your overall discounted cash flow model results, correct?
Yes. Just, yeah. Just verbalizing those, yes.
Certainly. Thank you. So in your verbalization of your results, on line 201, it states that, starting on 200, the model using reported investment analyst growth rates shows on average a dividend yield of 4%. We'll stop there for just a minute, correct? Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
So if we turn with me, please, and again, I apologize for some of the flipping back and forth, to Exhibit 2, QGC Exhibit 2.3, page 1. Column G, line 9, that's the adjusted yield that you're referring to, correct?
Right.
And that number in your work papers is 3.74%.
Right.
And you in your presentation, in your summary, you rounded that up 26 basis points.
This is more of a concept, you know, trying to show the order of magnitude. Obviously, the numbers are in the table, and, you know, I haven't tried to, you know, manipulate anything here. It was just more of a verbalization of what these results overall were saying.
Okay. And so you did the similar kind of presentation verbalization with respect to the earnings growth, because you stated on line 201 that the earnings growth rate of 5%, and it's a slight rounding up from your page 1 of Exhibit 2.3, column M, line 9 of 4.99, just a slight round.
Yes, just generalization.
And then moving further through the sentence, to arrive at an overall average required return on equity of about 9%, correct?
Correct.
Line 202. Moving back to the exhibit, the average that this work paper calculates is 8.73%.
Right.
So you rounded again 27 basis points.
Right.
What's the difference between your position, your recommended position, and the office's recommended position?
It's 95 basis points, I believe.
So you rounded more than the
No.
105 basis points?
Let's see, you're
9.3 to 10.35.
Yes.
So,
yeah, sorry.
Roughly a fourth of the difference between your recommendation and the office's recommendation is lost in rounding in your presentation.
No, I mean, my presentation is what, you know, there's, I think one of the things that we need to avoid, I mean, there's a level of variability here, you know, in these numbers. And here again, it was just trying to state overall the directional, you know, what one model showed versus the other. You know, clearly in my table and in the testimony, all the numbers are shown.
Okay. So in your presentation, you used two significant figures to present the company's position of 10.35. You didn't round that down to 10.
No.
So then, staying on page, or excuse me, on Exhibit 2.3, page 1, the range that is generated by this model using analyst growth estimates, the minimum is 7.96 and the maximum is 9.50, correct?
Correct.
And in your rebuttal update, if I can ask you to find another finger or two to switch to turn to that.
Sure.
So that would be QGC Exhibit 2.1R, page 1. The average falls a bit to 8.57, correct?
Correct.
And the range expands a touch. The minimum becomes 6.36 and the maximum becomes 9.76.
Correct.
And by definition, that range is reasonable. That all the numbers within that range are reasonable.
Using that model alone, yes.
Yes. Okay. But that's a relatively precise range. I mean, that your initial presentation is 150, I'm really bad at math, 7.96% to 9.5%. That's a relatively precise range. It's pretty tight.
Yes.
And it expands a little bit, but substantially different or substantially more precise range than your historic growth rate DCF.
Yes.
That we'll talk about just momentarily. Okay.
Yes.
And you testified previously that the scope of the range is indicative of the weakness of the model. You said that the range shows the weakness of the model.
Yes.
So would you believe that a tighter range is demonstrative of a stronger model? If the range shows the weakness of the model and the one range is smaller than another, the smaller range is a stronger model?
Not necessarily. Not if there's a systematic weakness in the model.
Okay. So let's move to a little bit further down, and we'll go back. I apologize for the back and forth. Line 203.
This is in the direct?
In your direct.
Okay.
And this is the summary of the model using historic earnings growth rates.
Right.
Your presentation summary is 4%. Earnings growth rate, so on average, a dividend yield of 4%. And then moving to QGC Exhibit 2.3, page 2, your work papers have that as 3.81%.
That's
same kind of rounding presentation.
That's correct, yes.
And then so that you would move through the same type of rounding throughout. And the summary that you have on 204, to arrive at an overall average required return on equity of about 11%.
Correct.
In your work papers, Exhibit 2.3, page 2, column L, line 9, have that at 10.75%.
Correct.
So another 25 basis points rounding of presentation.
For discussion purposes.
Certainly.
Yes.
Okay. But as we just discussed, the range here is 6.19 to 12.59.
Yes.
And by definition, all numbers within that range would be reasonable.
Not necessarily. You know, I think there's certainly numbers in this range that are below the reasonable level and certainly above the reasonable level. So,
can you put unreasonable numbers, but you averaged those to come up with a 10.75. You believe that the 10.75 is a reasonable number?
I think it's, you know, as I've requested, you know, in the 10.35, I think it's on the higher end of the reasonable numbers. We have received results from commissions in that range.
Is it so? It's though on the high end. It is on the reasonable.
It would be on the high end.
But it's reasonable.
Yes.
Can you put non-reasonable numbers in a formula to come up with a reasonable result? Can you use non-reasonable numbers in a range and average those and have a reasonable number
here
result
again,
by definition?
And this comes back to my summary here. You know, in part, you're looking at this overall, what investors are expecting out of the natural gas distribution business. And so, you know, I think it's okay to use averages to look at these on average, you know, across the board.
If the average is... I'm having a hard time understanding how you can get a reasonable result from a formula that includes unreasonable variables. Doesn't, by definition, the variables in the formula have to be reasonable to come to a reasonable...
I think if you start going there, then, you know, you start looking at the range of analyst, you know, growth estimates. You know, I think both of these models are, you know, you could say, yeah, there's some risk in these models because of the variability of the numbers that you could throw out as not reasonable.
Okay. Excuse me. You've testified that you believe that there's a bias from investment analysts to underrepresent the growth projections. Do you have any empirical support or publish support for that assertion?
No, not directly. I think we've looked back in the past, that if I look back, what the analysts were expecting back in 2009 for a five-year growth and what they actually did, they tended to be low.
So that's a personal judgment shared?
Yes, yes. That would not be an exhaustive scientific study, no. Okay.
Let's talk a little bit more about QGC Exhibit 2.3, page 2 of 2. Mr. Jetter talked with you a bit about the information that is in footnote 3.
Correct.
To employ a discounted cash flow model, you need to use estimates that are based upon market data, correct?
What you're trying to do is you're trying to discover what investors' expectations are.
And you're using data available to the market?
Yes.
So the first line on your footnote 3 is Questar Gas 5-year growth rate. And you have a low of 7% and a high of 9%. Where's that number available to the market?
That's available in 8-Ks of earnings investor presentations.
May I approach the witness?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis, I've handed to you a packet of pages. They are slides available from the Questar Corporation website. It is a PowerPoint presentation that accompanied Questar Corporation's third quarter 2013 earnings release, released on October 31st, 2013. You see that on the front page?
Yes.
Have you seen this presentation
sure.
before?
Yes.
You have? Okay. If you would, can you turn to slide 18? You want a copy? The slide is titled, What Makes Questar Unique?
Yes.
Just over halfway down, so on the left-hand side, there are kind of blocks that sort of separate horizontally the information that's presented. The third block down is entitled Solid Growth, correct?
Yes.
And the first bullet associated with that block reads, Strong 7 to 9% rate-based growth at Questar Gas.
Correct.
Is that the source of the of your number here in footnote 3 on this exhibit?
We've also stated that as earnings growth in other presentations.
So rate-based growth is the same as earnings growth?
We've stated it both ways, yes.
Are they synonymous?
Generally, yes.
If you would turn back two slides to slide 16 for me, please. This slide is entitled Q3 2013 Adjusted Return on Equity.
Correct.
This slide indicates that reported to the public, Questar Gas's adjusted return on equity as of the third quarter 2013 is 11%.
Correct.
And that was reported before any requested changes in this particular application in this case, correct?
Sorry, I didn't. We filed this case well before the third quarter.
But is this number that's presented does not incorporate any of the requested changes in the current application?
No, it does not. I would point out that the actual financial return on equity has a very distinct seasonal pattern because of you have losses during your second and third quarters, so your equity is at a low point at the end of the third quarter. And so you calculate this using the end of third quarter data. This number tends to be higher than you would see on a, on a end of a, end of the year.
Excuse me. So going back to your exhibit of 2.3, you have a Questar five-year growth rate, whether that's earnings or rate base.
It's earnings.
Earnings. For AGL Resources, you have a target five-year net income compound annual growth rate, correct?
Yes.
So that's a net income report?
Yes.
For Atmos Energy, you have a compound annual growth rate in earnings per share through 2016.
Correct.
So the time frames don't necessarily coincide.
No, I've used what they reported.
And is earnings per share the same as net income?
It certainly correlates strongly. You know, the only change would be a difference in outstanding shares.
So they're not exactly the same.
Not exactly, but similar.
For New Jersey Resources, you have long-term net financial earnings growth. What's right. The time frame of the long term? Do you know?
I'm assuming it's a five-year time frame. I don't know for sure. This is what they reported.
So not sure about the time synchronicity?
Other than it says long term. Okay. And I think investors would assume that's in the five-year range.
Okay. For South Jersey Industries, it reports average annual earnings per share growth. Is that a forecasted or a historical number?
Forecasted.
Forecasted number. Average over how long, do you know?
I don't know.
And then for WGL Holdings, you have earnings per share growth target through 2016.
Yes.
So that most closely follows the Atmos Energy report.
Correct.
So it's possible that some of those information aren't necessarily an apples-to-apples comparison.
No, not necessarily, but keep in mind what you're trying to do here is you're trying to understand what investors believe about long-term growth. And the way we've applied in this model, it's not just through 2016 or 2018. It's perpetual. It's you know, on into the future. So, you know, what we're trying to find is the best evidence, what investors have, what investors understand about that perpetual growth rate.
But those numbers don't necessarily represent the same piece of data.
No, and none of them represent that perpetual number.
Okay. If I can then move you back to your direct testimony. Line 99 through the first three-fourths of line 102, it's all one long sentence. Can you read that for me, please?
Okay, 99 through 104, is that?
102. It's one long, it's one sentence that covers most of line 102. So if you just start on line 99 and read to the first period.
Okay. In addition, even if Questar Gas's common stock were publicly traded, it would be necessary to use a proxy group to assure that the return on equity authorized for Questar Gas is commensurate with the returns on investments with similar risk and to avoid any anomalies in the return expected by investors in Questar Gas.
So your testimony is that it's important to use the proxy group in calculating these expected numbers.
Yes.
And you use Questar Gas in this number?
Questar Gas is not in the proxy group because they are not publicly traded.
But Questar Gas is in the data for Questar Gas is in the number, or is in the raw data that you use to calculate your industry earnings growth estimate.
Yes. Here again, what we're trying to estimate is what we believe how the industry is going to grow over the long term. And using Questar Gas as a point of reference of how they expect to grow along with, you know, some of these other companies, how they expect to grow, what they have publicly stated to investors, I think is an important data point.
doesn't it violate the independence of your comparison when you use Questar gas number in to calculate Questar gas data to calculate a number against which you're going to compare Questar gas?
No, if Questar gas were publicly traded, and you see this all the time, typically the publicly traded company stock is also included in the proxy group. So no, I don't think it violates anything there.
You think it's appropriate?
I think as a here again, I've used it for a very limited purpose, and that is to try to ascertain what investors understand about long-term industry growth rate.
So if you removed the Questar gas data and had a fully independent comparison, can you, I apologize to kind of put you on the spot.
But I didn't do that math. We certainly.
Just with respect to starting on footnote three, you would the low end of the range, you would have 27 divided by 5.
Yeah, so it's going to take, I mean, if you take out the 7% out of the average, so then you're averaging 5 numbers instead of 6. Yeah, it's going to come down, a quarter of a percent or so.
Okay.
My guess, without doing the math.
Okay, I've done the math.
Okay.
And used your formulas. So, for purposes of our discussion, would you be willing to just take a look at the spreadsheet that I've read on?
Sure.
Okay. May I approach?
Yes. Mr. Coleman, do you have another copy or two of that?
Certainly.
That might be all. You keep the one you need. We'll share these.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, for purposes of our discussion, I eliminated the information from Questar gas data, and the new midpoint, the new range, is 5.4 at the low to 6.8. That's not represented on your sheet,
right?
But the midpoint of that is 6.1.
Let's see. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay. I got it. So if we replaced your industry earnings growth estimate number with an independent number that doesn't include Questar gas data, you see I have a new column next to column J of 6.1.
Right.
And that's lower than your 6.42.
Correct.
And that's going to decrease your adjusted yield number, correct?
Yes, that'll make a slight adjustment to that.
And it will decrease your combined company growth estimate number.
Correct.
And then those two newly decreased numbers are summed together to get your DCF investor expectation column L.
Right. It drops by about 12 basis points.
Okay. So
on average, yeah.
The new average is 10.63.
About 12 basis points. Sorry.
Would that change your opinion? Now that you have an independent number against which to compare Questar gas, and that number is 10.63, does that change your opinion of the company's request of 10.35?
No.
If we go back to your direct testimony, on lines 204 and 205, starting on 204 and rolling over to 205, it reads, "I believe these two models support a required return on equity of 10.35%. And when you say these two models, you're referring to the two models of discounted cash flow that we've been talking about, correct?
Correct.
The simple average of the two results of your 8.73 and 10.75 is 9.74. So you,
yes.
There must be some sort of weighting, and you've testified with respect to a question from Mr. Jetter that it was not a mathematical selection, but an identification of a number within the range.
Correct.
And the numbers proposed by the office is also within the range, correct?
It would be, yes.
Yes. So it would be reasonable to select any number within that range. The range.
I think it shows that the, you know, the selection of a return on equity is not a mathematical exercise. You have to take into account a lot of information.
The simple average of the two is about 61 basis points lower than your recommendation.
Yes.
And okay. And with respect to the idea that you were just referencing of a comprehensive application of some of this data, in your rebuttal testimony, line 61 and 62, it reads, are you there? I don't want to be too fast.
Yeah, I'm there.
It reads, the results of these models, which are the whole suite of models that you employed, correct?
Yes.
The results of these models must be used with other information, including actual earned returns and recent authorized returns.
Correct.
Did you have the opportunity to review the surrebuttal testimony of Mr. Lawton?
Yes.
And you reviewed the references that he made in his testimony to the recently ordered returns in Nevada, Maryland, and Arkansas?
Yes.
And those numbers were lower than the company's request in this case, correct?
Yes.
And they were below 10?
Yes. And he selected some that are below 10.
10. So, and you saw his analysis about how those numbers compare to the office's recommendation of 9.3%?
Yes.
Do those recently ordered returns employed with your models change your opinion?
No, because there's other returns that are significantly higher than what he used there as well.
Can I have just a moment?
Yes, we'll be off the record.
Thank you.
While we're off the record, Lieutenant Colonel Fike, are you going to have cross-examination?
Yes, sir. Just a few questions. Probably like no more than 10 minutes.
Whatever time you need. I just wanted to make sure we didn't leave you out. Sometimes my field of vision, I forget this table.
With that, I think I would...
Let's be on the record.
I have no further questions and would pass the witness.
Thank you. Lieutenant Colonel Fike.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, Mr. Curtis.
Good morning.
I believe the division and the office have already answered a lot of my, or asked a lot of the questions and concerns I had regarding your DCF model, so I'm going to move into some different topics. You stated on line 452 of your direct testimony that you, wait till you get there, I guess.
Yes.
That you believe the commission should approve a 10.35% ROE because it was the same ROE the commission approved in the last previous rate case.
Yes.
And I believe you said that in your oral testimony this morning.
Yes.
As well as in response to a division question regarding that.
Correct.
That You provided expert testimony regarding the ROE, cost of long-term debt, and capital structure in the last rate case on 3 December 2009, did you not?
Yes.
You performed a CAPM analysis, a capital asset analysis in that last rate case?
Yes.
Your CAPM analysis yielded a mean result of 8.5% ROE, isn't that correct?
Yes.
However, you didn't give the CAPM model any weight in the last rate case because you thought it was too low, correct?
Yes. You recall back in 2009, the financial markets were in complete disarray, and the historical relationships did not seem to be holding true.
And you performed a CAPM model analysis in this rate case as well, correct?
Yes.
And your CAPM analysis yielded a mean 10.3% ROE as shown in your rebuttal testimony, QGC Exhibit 2.2R?
Correct.
This time you included the CAPM analysis in arriving at your 10.35% ROE, is that true? Because it supported your 10.35% recommendation, correct?
Yes.
All right. You provided expert testimony regarding cost of long-term debt in the last rate case on 3 December 2009, correct?
Correct.
Back then, the financial conditions, as you just mentioned, were drastically different than they are now.
Yes.
Was it a period of great uncertainty? Would that be fair to say it was a period of great uncertainty back then in 2009?
It was, yeah.
And by your testimony, the U.S. was still in the most significant recession since the Great Depression?
Yes.
The bank lending policies were very tight back then. The U.S. national employment rate was over 10%.
Right.
You calculated the cost of long-term debt was 6.25% back in 2009 for the company, correct?
Subject to check. I don't have those numbers with me.
I have a copy of your testimony. Would you like me to review it or subject to check?
I trust your numbers.
You calculated that Questar's cost of long-term debt now is expected to be 5.16% at the end of 2014. That's on line 461 of your direct testimony.
Yes, a couple of things have happened. Some higher cost long-term debt has matured and has been replaced with lower cost debt. That's probably the biggest change in those numbers.
So you would agree that Questar's cost long-term debt has been significantly reduced since the last rate case?
That's the average cost. And here again, it's because some higher cost debt has matured and been replaced with lower cost debt. So what I don't have clearly in mind is what the actual cost of debt at that time versus the actual cost, what the incremental cost of debt would have been at that time versus what it is today. I don't know that number. I don't remember that number off the top of my head.
Let me go back then. Let me refresh your memory. So you calculated the Questar's cost of long-term debt back then was 6.25%.
Yes, that is an average of all outstanding long-term debt issues.
And that's what you used for your expert analysis and opinion in the last case.
Yeah.
In this case, your expert analysis opinion used a cost of long-term debt of 5.16%.
Right, and that's not really based on projections. That's based on what the actual outstanding issues are at this time.
Would you agree then that the cost of long-term debt used in both your testimonies back then and today, cost long-term debt today is 17% lower than what it was in 2009 when you performed your direct testimony back then?
I agree that there's a significant change in the cost of long-term debt. But here, I think the biggest factor is the maturing of higher cost debt that has been issued many years ago that has now come due, has been matured, and has been replaced with something in the current market.
No more questions, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Curtis.
Thank you. Redirect.
Mr. Curtis, you were asked questions about Questar Gas's growth rate in one of your exhibits. I think it was Exhibit 2.3.
Yes.
And I believe in this case there's been a great deal of evidence about the importance of raising capital for Questar Gas. Is that true?
That is correct.
And will that be at risk if Questar Gas's credit rating is downgraded?
I think the cost of capital going forward certainly would go up if Questar Gas's credit rating is downgraded.
You were also asked questions about a report by Moody's. I believe it was a 2013 report.
Yes, it came out in November of 13.
Would it be your opinion that if Questar Gas's rate of return were reduced, that they would not be on a list for reconsideration for an upgrade necessarily?
I don't know for sure. I think it would, because the credit metrics deteriorate, I think it would make it harder to get an upgrade.
I believe there were also questions regarding that report that suggested that the utilities that were listed in that report were being considered for an upgrade. Is that true?
Yes.
But it's not necessarily the case that they automatically would get an upgrade if different factors that Moody's examines were to change dramatically or significantly.
That's correct. All they were announcing is that they were starting a review.
I would like you to turn to Exhibit 2.3, Column L.
2.3 in the direct?
Yes.
2.3, page 1 or page 2?
Page 1, please.
Okay, Column L?
Actually, I'm sorry, page 2.
Page 2.
Column L. I believe you have testimony in particular with regard to Northwest Natural Gas, and your testimony was that was somewhat anomalous. If you look across line 4, you will see that the DCF investor expectation for Northwest is 6.19. Can you explain why you think that might be the case?
Well, clearly, because in the, you know, if you look back at the 5-year numbers, in this model, Northwest Natural has actually shrunk over 5 years, and so that there's a negative number there.
If we were to eliminate Northwest Natural as being anomalous, would your numbers be closer to 11%?
Correct.
Are analysts projected growth rates perpetual, Mr. Curtis? Would you consider them perpetual or based on a forecasted period?
I think the analysts try to look at, they're looking at probably long-term of them is probably the 5-year range.
Why didn't you weigh the DCF model results? You had, I believe, two different model results. Why didn't you weigh them the same? What were your reasons for weighing them differently?
I believe that the investor expectations of long-term growth for the natural gas industry is really closer to the model, to the second version of the model rather than the first, which used analyst expectations. I think it's their expectations are actually better, bigger.
I think that concludes my redirect at this time.
Thank you. Any further questions from council? Any recross?
I just have one recross question. Are you aware, Mr. Curtis, in any time that you've been employed at Questar Gas, that you've put a bond issue up and had a failure to sell? Have you ever actually failed to?
No, you can always, sell a bond? We did have problems with access to capital in 2008, as did many companies. It wasn't in the long term area, it was in the short-term area that basically credit markets shut down. But we didn't try to issue long-term bonds at that point in time. It's not a question necessarily of whether you can sell a bond; it's what the price is going to be. Even junk bonds can often, in many markets, can sell, but at a price that is much greater.
Okay, and so, when you say that you wouldn't have access to capital, you're really saying that your cost of capital might be higher.
Certainly, yes.
But currently you're being reviewed for an upgrade in your bond rating.
By Moody's. Here again, there's a split rating anyway. What we'd hope is that the Moody's rating gets equal to the Standard & Poor's rating.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Just one brief question, hopefully. You just testified that on redirect that Northwest Natural Gas was an anomaly. If it was an anomalous, why did you include it in your proxy group?
What I wanted to do here again, the purpose of the second version of the DCF model was looking at a broad range in kind of industry growth rate applied to these proxy companies. So because it was broad, I thought it was important to leave the negative number in. So that reduced the results.
It wasn't so anomalous that you felt like it was improper to include.
Right.
I have nothing further.
Any questions from the commission for the witness? Thank you, Mr. Curtis. You're excused.
Thank you.
We'll be in recess until 10:30. Thank you very much.